Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Knife Talk is sponsored by Even Heat, the manufacturers of the finest heat-treating ovens available. Find your next oven at evenheat-kiln.com. To the chopper!
Welcome, everybody, to another wonderful episode of Knife Talk Podcast. This is where we talk knives, we answer questions, we give relationship advice sometimes. We're starting to do some deep dives. It's really great. So anyhow, we'll just get right into it, and we'll talk about what's been going on this last week. Craig, let's kick off with you. What have you been up to this last week?
The usual, just all hands to the grinder this week. So I've had this big order. It's been coming up for some time. That's been in my sort of schedule for 200 knives. And it's my biggest order to date. And I started that this week. So just starting the grinds this week. And it has been a real grind. It's just been nonstop. And it's been dirty. It's been hot. But good fun. Just getting through it. I like that sort of rhythm of getting into something and just keep on grinding. So that's all, really. No other big news from me this week. It's just been all hands to the grinder.
It's really so just out of curiosity, because I'm actually working on a big stack. I was grinding a lot of knives at the same knife over and over again. Hmm. It's kind of mentally draining, don't you think?
I tend to sort of zone out a little bit. Oh. So I wouldn't say it's draining. If anything, I find it quite relaxing. And you just sort of get into a routine. And I quite like it. I know it's not for everybody, but for me, it just tends to sort of calm me down a bit, I think. I know exactly what I'm doing. I've got it's all about preparation for me. So I've got a stack to my left. I've got my dip tag in the middle, and I've got a stack to the right, which, you know, as I go through each grit, they just follow along the process. And I quite like that. It's a bit sort of zen-like.
Oh, I like it. That sounds great.
That's great.
I wasn't very zen when I was doing it.
We throw in shit and
I was just like, you know, I had to. It's hard.
Did you have something else you'd rather be doing?
I break it up sometimes. So yeah, but I think someone asked us a question about that. We'll talk about that later. So nothing else, Craig. Nothing else in your life this past week?
Nothing really. No.
How about that you added phone calls to the podcast?
Ah, yes. So I've become the Knife Talk receptionist. No chasing me around the office at the office party, okay? None of that going on. So we had this, I think Mareko had the idea a few weeks ago about us having a hotline. So I managed to find a service that's doing stuff for us. And yeah, we've had quite a few messages from people. I think a lot of you didn't think it was real because there must have been 15 or 16 messages. So people just ringing, laughing and hanging up. We don't need them. We don't need them. So we want your tips, your questions, any news that you want us to talk about, whether it's community stuff or whatever it is. Just leave it all on there for us and we can just filter through it and we can get away with it.
I think it's hilarious that somebody called, probably chickened out as soon as it picked up, and then just like, you know, got cold feet and left us some nonsense.
Yeah. listen to some of the shit I've had to listen to this week.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Hey, Beavis. Is this like a hotline for hot chicks? Shut up, butthead.
Jesus. That's the kind of stuff people have been saying.
Oh my God.
Come on. Be more imaginative than that.
What is it? Come on, guys.
And that's like 90s stuff. It's like, you know, it's like they're going to ring up and go, what's up? As if it's like really current.
I mean, come on. I mean, you know, obviously a hotline isn't necessarily the most technological thing, but we're trying to interact with you people. And this is, come on.
Well, yeah, and if you actually want to get on the podcast, like, you got to do something better than that.
I mean,
sure. Exactly.
Or meaningful.
Obviously, that's not the case, because we just put Beavis and Butthead on. So, I mean,
that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, come on.
To do.
Yeah, do something fun. Come on.
Amuse us.
Jeez.
What have you been up to, Mareko?
I myself have been working on another big monster blade. So I finished up that mammoth tooth blade recently, and I got another big blade. It's 11 and a quarter inch
now.
Chef's knife. The customer ordered 10 and a half inch chef's knife. And usually I just forge a blade out. And if there's a little extra material, I offer it to the customer at no additional cost. So basically they're getting a slightly bigger knife for nothing extra, but big knives are tricky to grind. Just to keep things consistent over the whole length of that all the way out to, you know, 11 and a quarter inches. But anyways, been working on that, got the handle on, and a couple days ago I had a little bit of a, you know, things were going super well on sculpting the handle, and it's a Japanese cowboy style handle. It's going super well, very, very comfortable. Things were just falling in place. And of course, I have one little slip up and I'm like, okay, I think I can recover from this. I start recovering from that. And then I start doing a different facet and I'm not happy with it. I potentially completely fucked it up. So I might be ripping off a handle. I don't know. This has happened in the past, and all I can do is, in the moment, I'm so frustrated and flustered, I just want to like smash it off and start over. But I've learned that I need to just set it down and go do something else for a couple days, so I can come back with fresh eyes, because otherwise I'll just still be too too irritated about it. So I've outside of that, I've been working on some side project stuff that haven't really been talking about. So I'll just keep it at that.
Tease.
But other than that, yeah, that's what the week has been like for me.
How's the new shop looking?
The new shop, it's almost completely set up. I think one of the last things I got to do in the grinding room is set up kind of a hook system for all the belts. Because right now they're still in boxes and they get spread out all over the floor, and it's just not awesome. It's the drag, really. So I got to get a little bit more organized in there. Forging area is all set up. Kind of my workbench area is set up. So yeah, it's just doing the last little things in the grinding area to kind of get things situated and get the workflow going.
Belt organization is, I hate belt organization.
Yeah.
It's terrible, because you have the new belts and then you have the used belts, but the used belts aren't so bad that you can't, you know, like I save the used belts for like a mild steel stuff.
True.
And it's always like I'm trying to go through them all and rotate them around where you hang them up. And it looks like, you know, looks like somebody threw a bunch of giant rubber bands all over the floor. I hate it.
Right.
It's the worst.
I've got a system where I've got, so under my grinder, I've got like a door, and you know, with shelving underneath, and I've got these shelves that are maybe just sort of 6 inches high, so I've got all my belts, the new belts there, so I can just pick up a new belt straight and carry on going, you know, very, very quickly. But then I've got all my used belts behind me, and I've got like five hooks, so when they're And they're sort of graded, as in, like, they're nearly fucked,
right,
semi-fucked, good to go, and, you know, nearly new. And I just sort of put them along that thing. But, yeah, it's easy to just sort of slip up one day and just think, oh, bugger. And before you know, you've got a nest on the floor of all half-used belts and all sorts. It's a nightmare.
One that reminds me of something I saw a while back. Somebody had installed underneath their workbench kind of like the slide for a drawer. But it's only one side of this one, you know, usually a drawer has two slides on either side. So it's just one. And then hanging from it, they had hooks. And then they would hook the belts onto that, and it just slid right underneath the bench when they didn't want it in the way. And they pulled it out and slid right back out. You grab a belt off, slide it back in. I've been wanting to put that together. That's probably still down the road a little ways, because I don't really have a kind of bench system set up. But maybe Jeff, you got a whole long bench, don't you? That might be something you could put underneath and it keeps stuff from getting on the belts now.
It's a disaster.
Yeah, use it for storage.
I keep it. Yeah, I keep like the compressor under there. I keep the vacuum cleaners and the bullshit. And it looks like a real, I ain't putting anything, you know, I don't want to put my belts under there. I keep them above everything and I look at them and I can get an idea of like when I need to reorder.
That's a good idea.
But I usually do like a hook for the new ones and then right next to it, a hook for the used ones. But then that hook for the used ones always gets jumbled up and it's just like, and it looks like shit. And it isn't optimal. So.
Why can't we get rid of belts? I struggle with getting rid of belts.
I don't know. I got a pile. You know what I got a pile of is I got a pile next to my disc sander. I get 9x11 paper. And then I'm cutting away, you know, 9x11 paper is great for sandpaper, is great for a 9-inch disc, because you end up with when you cut it away, you end up with a little piece that you can reuse, you know, a 2-inch piece that you can reuse for, you know, hand sanding. I end up with a pile of these offcuts and I have to sort through them, and I'm like, and you got to rip off the little corners, and you're like, it's always like a, you know, you said a couple months ago that I have a clean shop. This shop is such a shit house right now. And it's like, it's exhausting. And I have a customer coming after this. I got to clean the shop up after we podcast. It's like, ugh.
I've got a question regarding your disc sander, actually, because I'm there. I'm ready to push the button, I think. I need one. How are you adhering your paper to your platen? Is it just like an adhesive spray? Comes off easy enough?
No, I don't use an adhesive. There's this, everything I learned about disc sanders, I give 100% credit to Nick Wheeler. Nick Wheeler has great videos on disc sanders. And he used this feathering disc paste or swill. I don't know what it is. It's like out of a tube.
Swill.
And you kind of put it on, and then you kind of put your paper against it. So I know back in the old days, and I actually just ordered from Combat. Combat actually has 9-inch discs that are not thin like a Rhino Wet. They're like the thickness of, you know, grinding discs. I actually ordered some of those, and I think that style you can use adhesive spray. I'm not 100% sure, but I use the problem with the super thin paper is if your disc isn't super super clean, any lumps in there transfers out. So you got to keep the disc super clean. Yeah, but there you go.
Yeah, okay. I use an adhesive spray myself.
Yeah, I have some adhesive spray that I use for sometimes if I have to do a quick template for cutting out a stock removal knife. I'll draw something out and then I'll use the adhesive spray to put it against the steel so I can kind of have a template on there. But I should try that. I should clean up this goddamn disc but I use feathering disc adhesive.
Gotcha. Okie doke. So your week, Jeff, what's been going on for you?
Idiocy. Is that a new word? That's my new word. Idiocy. It's I worked on a lot of knives, and then I was grinding these 50 Bandito knives that I'm doing with Carl, and that was it was a lesson in trying to be zen. And I guess I have too much going on in my life to the point where I'm now checking off all the commitments. I didn't say no to hardly anything for this time of year for some reason. So now I'm going through the things I committed to, and I'm checking them off gleefully. One of the things were I got asked by my friend John Sharp at the Birdsall House. He wanted to make paella for this upcoming Oktoberfest in Croton, and I said, listen, let's just do a warm up so we can figure out how we're going to do it, because it's not like cooking hot dogs over a grill. So we did that on Wednesday, and it was a really good turnout. It could have been better, but, you know, everyone was happy. The chef was there. The sous chef was there. I was kind of running it, and it was a lot of fun, and a lot of people showed up. And now we're getting ready. In 2 weeks, we're going to go to Croton with, like, instead of making one giant paella, we're going to make, like, six. So it's, like, now it's just math city. But luckily, smart thing was I didn't have to do... I said, I'm not doing any of the prep in your kitchen, in the chef's kitchen, because I just can't. Where's this? And where's that? And how do I turn this on? I don't want any of that. So I did everything at my home, and it was like, you know, it was just a lot of work. It was great. I'm glad I did it. But I swear to God, I this might be the end of me and paella after this whole thing. Well, the proportions change. Like when you... what are you going to talk about fucking rice for? I mean, it was fun. I learned a lot. And I'm going to be, by the end of this, I'm never going to say the word paella again. Go fuck yourself. I'm going to go do something else.
Fair enough.
So.
Fair enough.
All right. Here's Knife Talk KTP News. This is where we have little things. We actually have a lot of news in the news today. First off, I'm going to do, this is the, this is the help wanted section of the news. our buddy, Tomer, this is a great opportunity. Now, listen up. If you're in Europe, if you're a European knife maker, you don't even have to be a knife maker. Florentine Knives is looking to hire someone to be a knife maker at Florentine Knives in Barcelona. He's looking for someone who's smart, very attentive to detail. He's looking for someone who can grow with him. He's actually looking for someone who can help take over, you know, part of his work as a knife maker. And I don't think you don't need to be a blacksmith. You don't need to be a bladesmith. You don't need to. I think that the most important thing is to have a good attitude, be able to, you know, fit and finish, work for perfection, be smart. It's not brain surgery. I think that a lot of people are very qualified to do this, and it's a great opportunity for you to kind of work for one of the best knife makers in Europe. The caveat is, all you Americans, don't write this email address down, because he wants someone with a EU passport, a European passport. He's looking for Europeans. So
the Brits, you've got 10 days if you're a Brit, because then your passport is not valid.
Yeah. So, I think he said he said a European passport.
Right,
and if you email him at info@florentinekitchenknives.com and, you know, show some interest, he'll you know, it's a great opportunity. He's a smart guy. It's very, don't be daunted. There's a lot of room for growth. It is a really great opportunity for someone to work in it for a great place. So I would.
Amazing opportunity.
Oh, yeah, amazing. Dude, I was there. And it's not like, he's not going to come up to you and he says, I want you. It's going to be a great opportunity for learning. For growth, for business, it's a beautiful space. You got to be clean. You have to be, you know, be able to. That's it. Go. I would do it if I was in Europe and I was a young guy. I didn't have a, you know, I could move around. I would take this job in a heartbeat.
Nice. Any other news? What news we got?
Well, I mean, if you guys want to talk about, you know, Mareko, you know about Emilio Carrillo, Sun and Stars Forge.
Yeah.
All right.
What about him?
Well, this is an incredible story, and he's a super guy, and he's really known. He's known for making beautiful knives, but he also does a lot of making steel from, you know, sand. You know, he makes steel. He makes the big furnace, and they melt it down. And bloomery and everything. So there was a friend of his named William Short, who runs a Viking research group in Iceland, and they wanted to make old iron with in Iceland using the sand and all that traditional technique. So I guess he came over there are all these slag piles in Iceland. Some of them are even two stories tall, and they made over 1,000 tons of
Jesus
iron over there 300 years. So they got interested and they met up with him. They came over. I'm butchering the story, but he came back to the U.S. and he wanted to learn how to make bloomery iron. So we went to Iceland. So Emiliano and his guys went over to Iceland and they made traditional iron at this event, this Viking workshop festival, and they had all these great vendors and stuff like that, and they actually made bloomery iron and that hadn't been made in Iceland for 700 years off this beach. I guess they got sand from the beach, and they got all this. It was really cool. So it was a great opportunity for him, and they made iron for the first time in a long time. And Emiliano was, I think they're going to do at some point there'll be a video out, but that was really cool that he got out to go over there and make iron for the historic Viking iron. I hope I told that story right, but whatever.
That sounds great. Oh, that's incredible.
And then one other thing is the Texas Ferry Supply guys told me to tell you guys that Jeff Davidson Custom Knives is putting on a clinic/demo Tuesday, October 8th, starting at 6 p.m. at the Kensdale Texas Farrier Supply location, which is near Fort Worth. So there's going to be food, raffles, and demos, so get a hold of them and
nice. Go
to that.
You've got your Maker Camp coming up, haven't you, Jeff?
Well, thank God for this podcast, because if it wasn't for this last week, I told a story about how I didn't want to I didn't want to, we're going to be sleeping in a cabin with all these blacksmiths. This is October 11th to the 14th. We're going to be with the Jimmy DiResta and his crew in at the Maker Camp. Go follow the Maker Camp. And thank God for this podcast. And not to mention, thank God that Chris Cash listens, because he listened to the podcast immediately. And I had said, yeah, we're all going to be in a room. So he's our Chris Cash, Mount Phillip Metalworks, is our wrangler and our hype man, and he's taking care of everything for the blacksmiths. So he contacted the people of Blackthorn Resort. He says, yeah, man, you better get these guys a room, because Vader said you're gonna get them a room. And I guess they said to him, like, oh, I thought we were there gonna camp. So if it wasn't for this podcast, so they got us rooms. Wow. Thank God, because I would have been such a miserable son of a bitch, and I would have bitched and complained. So Chris, hats off to Chris for watching my back on this podcast. Thank God for this podcast, because if I got up there and I worked all day as a blacksmith and I had to get into a sleeping bag and stew in my own swill overnight and do it again, it would have been I would have been miserable, and everybody else would have been miserable, because I'm not happy unless you're not happy. So thank God for Chris.
You don't suffer in silence.
No. I'm not happy. That's what Don Imus used to say. He's like, I'm not happy till you're not happy. So there you go.
Other news have we got? We've had more EDCs out this week. So for those who don't know, as well as our regular Monday podcast, our Monday morning podcast, we're putting out a short episode every weekday. So every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. These are generally, hey man, can I ask you a question? Or they could be tips, or they could be things that people are now leaving on our answer phone. It's just going to be a bit of fun every day, sort of 5-10 minutes. So make sure you're subscribed, and you're going to get those EDC episodes too.
With pop, we put a lot more pop in this last week.
We did. We did. Yeah. Yeah. It was a lot more fun this week. Yeah. We've also got our meetup, our Knife Talk forum members have got the meetup in South Wales, back in the UK. And that is a JR knife maker. He's got some woodland there. So that's happening next weekend. So I'm flying out on Thursday. So next week, or possibly the week after, we'll be able to tell you a bit of what happened there. But it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to that.
Looking nice. Forward to hearing about it.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear about it either. So when it comes to the calendar of events, this month's featured maker is Mr. Joe Edson. I want to just give him a quick shout out. He makes badass straight razors. I think actually made it. He was my community showcase a little while back. But this coming weekend, September 28th to the 29th, down in Easton, Pennsylvania, the Lehigh Valley Knife Show is going to be, or sorry, Lehigh Valley Knife Show is going to be happening in Easton, Pennsylvania.
That's right on the border of New Jersey, right next to Phillipsburg. Yeah, I helped build I helped build a bronze foundry in Phillipsburg. We called it Pennsyltucky. It's a good area. Easton's a good area.
Nice.
Combat Abrasives make the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers, available in any size and at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with the promo code KNIFETALK15. Do it now!
P.S. I just ordered some extra belts and stuff, and that 15%, you know, shaves off much more than you think. Like, I was surprised at how much more it shaved off than I was expecting. I bought like $320 worth of stuff and peeled off $50 worth of, you know, discount. That's not nothing.
Nothing to be stiffed at.
No, it's great.
I was going to say our listeners are not enamored with Arnie or fake Arnie.
You know,
but
what?
Lots of messages like, who is this guy? He sounds nothing like him.
You know, I like the sports guy. I like our sports guy. He might be my favorite. And that's the thing. If you call our hotline, I don't know the number offhand, it's that guy. It's, hey, man, can I ask you a question? I love that guy.
We need a jingle with a hotline number.
We could have him on the podcast. I'd love to talk to him with that voice. He'd be a great guy to just, like, you know, be our, like, the Ed McMahon or the, you know, oh, yeah, you know, here we are. I love that guy's voice.
He charges by the minute for his voiceover work. Oh, he'd have to be a quick show.
Can you imagine all of a sudden we get this bill from this asshole for, like, what, $200? Get out of here. Get out of here.
Do you know what I'd prefer to have on the show?
Go ahead.
This one.
Let's take a deep dive.
God, that one. She's horrible.
Mareko set out a question this week, our deep dive question. Do you want to read out your question, Mareko?
Yeah, all right. So just quick premise, or preface was, I don't know what the word.
Preface.
Anyways,
is fine.
Preface
is good.
Preface. Okay. I listened to this podcast called London Real, and the guy does a lot of really great interviews on there. And a question that I've heard him ask a few different times that I thought was really cool is this. He says, if you had access to a magical phone that allowed you to call your past self, the self when you first started out knife making, what advice would you give yourself?
I like that.
That's good.
What do you think?
Do you
want
to jump straight in, Jeff?
Well, I wouldn't go back to the knife making. I'd go back to my childhood, and I would go back because I it's been told to me that I become angrier now than I used to be. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that when I was a kid, I was constantly told no, and you don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you're talking about. And I lost a lot of confidence when I was a kid. And it really affected me. Like, I was constantly judging myself, or I was constantly not believing in myself. And it got to the point where it gave me, I had a real problem with my self-esteem. And the older I got and how much I realized, yeah, these motherfuckers don't know what they're talking about. I should have listened to myself. I was right. I was right when I was younger. I should have believed in myself. If I could call myself back, I would have slapped myself around and say, don't listen to those cocksuckers. Oh, pardon me. Pardon me, deep dive. That one, I got a little bit hairy on that one. Don't listen to these motherfuckers. That's better, right?
Slightly better, maybe.
Don't listen to them. And you know, you should believe in yourself a little bit more and stop the nonsense. That's what I would do. I like this question because that is an issue I have. I sometimes second guess myself, and when I shouldn't, because somebody said to me, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. And I hate that. Mm. So there you go.
Yeah.
Now I'm angry.
Calm yourself.
Yeah.
So if I had access to a magical phone that allowed me to call my past self, well, first of all, I'd patent this magical phone. It sounds like there's money in this phone.
Oh, yeah.
But no, I think in a similar vein, really, just to have more confidence in myself, because I've always been sort of a people pleaser, doing what people want me to do and trying to make people feel happy. And sometimes, you know, sort of degrading myself to do that. So, yeah, as a youngster, I'd say, look, again, don't care what people think, or, you know, just try to make yourself happy. You being happy will make others happy. I think that would be something. But also, I think take your time as well, that there's no shortcuts. I think particularly when I started making knives, I wanted to make the best knives, and I wanted to be selling knives. I wanted to go full time, you know, way, way too quickly. Mm-hmm. And this is a question that we get asked a lot on the show. You know, when should I go full time? You know, it's not easy. So make sure you're getting everything covered, and make sure you've got a bit of runway before you take that leap. And just do what you want to do. Find the market for you. Don't go out there to try and please other people. do what you enjoy doing, and hopefully you can find a market for that.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I mean, basically, it would be the same for me. I'd call myself and I'd say, you know, don't worry about taking all these kind of like pre-orders and stuff, and don't worry about rising too quickly. Or I guess getting, I don't know if it's getting paid a lot for your work really quickly or whatever, but the system that I have used to take pre-orders and deposits and stuff, it has its place, but I think I wish I would have stopped taking the the deposits and pre-orders sooner. That way it would have, I would be in a more free position, and I'm super thankful for my order list, because it's, you know, it's job security. Because who knows, like, if the economy takes a shit tomorrow, I mean, I might lose some of my customers, but I still have some that would still, who'd still follow through with the orders. I mean, that's what, when I first started working for Bob Kramer, it was in 2008, and he only rose from there. And I think there's a part of the market that we've connected with that isn't necessarily affected by economic downturns and stuff like that. I think just having more patience, not trying to catch up, because I was also surrounded by a lot of super talented makers all the time, and so I was trying to catch up with them and prove myself to them. And I think I would advise myself to just take my time and slow it down, and you don't have to prove anything to anybody. What's actually, I think, really more important is kind of like the community building that we've talked about before. And I think with a slower burn, I would have had more of an opportunity to build I'm very fortunate for the strong community of supporters I have now, but people would have had the opportunity to kind of grow with me if I had done that sooner when I first started out. But I just off the jump, I was getting compensated well for my work, and which I'm very fortunate for, but I think there are things that I had missed as well, opportunities missed. But
I have a question for you, back to what you were saying in regards to job security in your list. And this has happened to me, and I'm interested in to know what you both think. If somebody gives you a deposit and time has passed and something happens, an emergency in their lives, they lose a job, Christmas is coming and they need money for their Christmas, and they ask you for their deposit back, what do you do?
I've given deposits back.
Yeah,
do it. Me too. I think it depends on the situation. If it's just a case of they've changed their mind, they've seen a knife elsewhere, you're like, well, I've scheduled you in now. No, but if it's a case of somebody is down on their luck and they literally can't afford to,
that's what you have to be prepared for.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
That's the right thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And it can be hard sometimes. I guess hard in the way where I've had people say, you know, I've given them their refund back or refunded their deposit and stuff. And then I get them trying to jump back into the list at the same place they were before. And same price as they were before. I'm like, ooh.
Yeah, get the fuck out of here. No.
That's doesn't work like that. Sorry.
That's some bullshit right there. You can't trust a person like that. No, you know, because we had a guy who bought a set, a knife, a fork, an oyster knife, a blah, 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 blah. And he lost his job and Christmas was coming and we had to refund him. And it was a nice chunk of money. And like, you know, but I mean, you have to do it. You know, you have to do it. And, but at the same time, it's like, if that motherfucker calls me back, I'm like, hey, man, I know there's a place you can get some Cutco knives down the street. Go bother them.
Yeah, I got a buddy who didn't take a deposit. And what the customer had ordered was like a 6-piece stainless Damascus knife set and a couple chef's knives. And my buddy had just started making stainless Damascus. And so he was doing all this work to kind of continue to experiment and learn, and spent months figuring this stuff out and building this set. And then when it came to paying, the customer was like, I changed my mind.
Yeah.
And it's like, bro, where's the communicate? And so that's part of, like, you know, like a lot of makers feel really uncomfortable with taking deposits, but the reality is, like, that's how it works in almost any other industry. Is you are the whoever the creative is takes a deposit. And part of it is the security that that person is going to follow through. But obviously, like we just discussed, you know, there are situations where, you know, shit happens and life changes and people fall on hard times and you try to be sympathize with that. But I think
I got a dude right now. He bought a pile of oyster knives. He gave me a deposit for half and they've been sitting on my desk for months. And we keep sending him messages. You still want these or, what do you want to do? You want to, like, I was willing to even say, look, you can, you know, you take the deposit and you can take whatever, how many oyster knives were worth the deposit. And I'll sell the rest of them. He goes, no, I'm going to pay. And I'm like, all right, well then pay, you know, but it's like, it's not the end of the, I mean, we're not talking about a pile of money here, but at the same time, it's like, at the same time, like, I know that the guy's probably going through some hard times and I was like, hey, look, if you want, I'll sell these oyster knives easy, you know? So,
yeah,
but I mean, you know, it's tricky, man.
For sure.
It ain't all high fives and what did you call it, Craig? High fives,
high fives and hand jobs.
There you go.
Jesus.
There you go.
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
All right. This is the time in the podcast where we ask you, the listener, to send us your messages. Obviously, in this podcast, we're telling you, please call the hotline. I don't know the number. But call the hotline and then or you can DM us your questions, your tips, blah, blah, blah. So the first question we got comes from Meathead Blades. Hey, guys, can I ask you a question? Will buying equipment like a forging press, power hammer, heat treat oven and the Battus grinder really make a big difference in between a long time hobbyist knife maker and a full time forging shop guy? So is it really worth spending the big bucks for the big equipment to transfer into being from a hobbyist to a full-time maker? What do you think, guys?
Well, firstly, I don't think that having all the equipment makes you, a great knife maker. You you need to have experience using this equipment. So it's not going to happen overnight. It's not a case of just going out and buying yourself, this profession. You buy things and you're going to have to experiment with them. You're going to fail. You're going to learn and so on. And over time, you're going to get better. So it's not just an immediate jump between, part-time hobbyist to, full-time superstar knife maker. That doesn't happen. Yeah, I think, if you get better equipment and you get to use it well, it stands the chance that you're going to make a better product. But, we've all seen people just, with a dirty old hammer, just making these amazing knives, and they're mm-hmm. incredibly skilled. But I think if you've got the right equipment, you can follow processes to get yourself a good end result.
Yeah. Yeah. I 100% agree. I don't know how many times, I play guitar and I don't know how many times I had friends that dropped money or had family members buy them these fancy ass guitars and they take 10 lessons and then they never play again. And it's like, bro, it's not in the equipment that it's your dedication, your passion, your ongoing education and drive to learn more. I think that really it just kind of makes you more of a professional than maybe a hobbyist. Who is it? Mark Bartlett. He's a part-time maker. He doesn't turn out a lot of knives, but he takes his time. And I think he would probably refer to himself as a hobbyist, but he is one of the best fucking makers I know. And it's because he is dedicated some serious time into just refining his skills to a point where he's just turning out great shit. But equipment wise, I don't think it's all about the equipment. I mean, even if you look at the makers from South America and Thailand, I mean, these guys are,
and Pakistan and India, those fucking guys.
They got some tough
situations. They're turning out the best copies in the world with nothing, with sandals on their feet and an iPhone. Motherfuckers.
Anyways, the South American and Thai makers are working with very little equipment, but they're really making it happen and turning out some really incredible stuff. I mean, and Julian Antunes, he built his own power hammer, and it's, it's a tiny little rinky-dink thing, but it, it's making shit happen, so.
Mm. It's funny what you say. You mentioned about guitars there. Having the best guitar doesn't make you any better. So I play guitar too. And when I got married, we had all our, obviously, family and friends, all that there. But it was in the woods. We found this place in West Wales, which is like a village in the middle of the woods, and you could hire the whole place. It was great. But I was playing actually a song. Instead of giving vows, I wrote a song, you know, played it in front of everybody. But my brother, who is my best man, he had to do a speech. So on the morning of the wedding now, and I'm panicking, I've got lots of stuff to do and checking everything's right. My brother came up to me and said, look, he said, what I'd like to do for your speech is play guitar, you know, and sing it instead. And I was like, oh, right, okay. He's like, but I don't play guitar. Could you teach me how to play just a few chords?
Oh, my God!
This is the morning of my wedding. He's like, could you teach me just a few chords? And I'm just like, are you kidding me?
That's...
as if it's that easy. Ugh.
That is... that's hilarious. What a dickhead. That's a dickhead thing to say.
I'm going to make sure you listen to this. My brother will love
What's his name? What's his name?
Jack.
Yes. What the fuck, Jack? Come on, man. You can't do that. Jesus Christ, Jack. Come on, man.
This is the best bit of the show.
Back to what we were talking about the equipment and stuff like that. We have had questions in the past of like, well, if I had $500, can I build a power hammer? They're buying good quality stuff will make you more efficient. If, like you guys were saying, it's all about what you're going to do with it. You could have a 2,000-pound paperweight that if you're not going to use it, it's, you know, bah, bah, bah. I think that it's important to spend your money wisely. And like when you talk about like grinders, anytime I bought my 2x72 grinder, my disc grinder, all my equipment, even my tire hammer, I never thought this was a mistake. There was only one piece of equipment that we're not going to talk about that I always felt was a huge mistake. But other than that, I've never thought anything that could make me more efficient was a mistake to buy. All the big buys, I've always felt really like, oh, this was really helpful. I'm really glad I got this. So in that regards, yes, it's what you put into it. But at the same time, you know, having equipment that makes you more efficient is going to make you, if it makes you more efficient, it makes you better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Funnily enough, just this morning we were out shopping, my wife and I, and we were in like a DIY store and they had these drill presses and they were on offer. And I was like, oh, I could do with another drill press. She said, well, you've got two. I'm like, yeah, but if I had a third, I could have it set up just for countersinks, for example. She said, well, why can't you just change what you've got? And it's like, well, it's that thing. It just makes it more efficient. You know, if I'm doing that, you know, 100 times a week, you know, each time it may take me a minute, you know, over months, that would add up. No, for the sake of, you know, 100 euros, I could have something that's permanently set up.
I just did that for these Bandidos. I have two different holes. Nice. I have two different holes, and I didn't want to change out the drills. So I went and got an inexpensive Porter Cable drill bit to dedicate that to the countersinks, exactly what you're saying. It did make my... And you know what? It was a cheap drill, but I was like, you know what? This is a pretty good drill. And I totally believe in, you know, extra equipment if it makes your life easier. It totally saved me from having to take out the bit and do it again and take out the bit and again. Yeah. I went from one to the next. I had my old shop. We used to have a drill that had three drill heads, and it was the drill, the tap, and the countersink. And you go from one to the other, and it made the job faster.
And I didn't buy it, so I'm hoping my wife has listened to this now. She can understand.
Yeah, you want me to yell at your wife like you yelled at your brother?
You yelled at my brother, now you got my wife. You yelled at my mother,
I'm not yelling at anybody in your family. One family member at a time, per episode.
Oh, we've got a message on our hotline.
Hello?
Hey, I was wondering, you guys are all fathers, and I'm a father too, from Sheffield Forge on Instagram. When are you guys going to let your kids handle knives? What age are they going to be when they are monitored and supervised? And what age are you guys going to let the boys run wild, so to speak? Thanks, guys.
So when are we going to let our kids handle knives? So I'm not sure whether he means help making knives or just, you know, using knives in the kitchen, whatever.
Sure.
What do you think, Mareka? Because you've got a youngster, Mareka.
Yeah, so my son is now three, but when I think he had just turned two. You know, we have these, like, kind of cheapo little steak knives. They're not fancy, cool steak knives like Craig's. So they don't have the best edge on them, which is... fine because we were just cutting like grapes and tomatoes and stuff. But I just stood right over him. And at first, I did the kind of like where you're helping somebody, or you see like in the movies where somebody's helping somebody else swing a golf club or a bat. So I'm just like, he's holding the knife and then I'm holding his hand and then I'm holding the fruit. And then I just like help guide and show him. We did a few of those and then I let him do a couple on his own. And just slow, a little bit at a time is what I've been doing. It's not every time I'm cutting anything. And he loves it. I mean, he has this sense of fulfillment or achievement that he's cutting stuff up and he loves it's just and also watching something change from like a whole piece of fruit and then he's breaking it down and cutting it into smaller pieces is also really cool for him.
Have you seen the Opinel sets? And I think they're called Le Petit Chef. And they're like a little chef knife for kids. And in that sort of choil area, they've got like a rubber hole. So they can put their finger in, so they know they'll never get their finger under the blade. They look really cool.
No, yeah, that sounds good. No, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, for that sort of age, I think these would probably be perfect. I think it's an Opinel, it's their range, and I think it's called Le Petit Chef.
Sure.
I'll send you a link. They look pretty cool.
I think also for anybody out there who has younger kids that think they want to get into the kitchen and start helping, I've started seeing more and more of these kind of these like plastic serrated knives that are used for cutting down lettuce or salad or something like that. And those I think can be pretty safe for kiddos to use. That way it doesn't have the weight behind it if the knife happens to fall, or you're not super concerned if the knife falls, as well as less likely going to cut themselves if they happen to grab or touch the blade.
Nice.
There you go. Yeah.
What about you, Jo? I know your daughter's older because you're as old as the hills. So, I mean, when did you sort of introduce your daughter to knives?
It's fine. Yeah, so, yeah. Well, it was in my walker and she needed to push me down the stairs. I mean, what? She started interesting in she was interested in cooking and then she started cooking when using knives. She was a little older, so it was, whatever you said. I mean, she was interested in cooking, and then she uses all the different knives. She looks in all the knives and grabs one. I made her and her mother a knife just for, like, prepping. They do a lot of prep stuff for their lunches and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, you guys do it at 2 and 3, so that sounds good to me, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, mine are way too young. They're 9 months, but already they're hugely interested in food. They'll eat anything. We had like a spicy curry the other day. They ate. It's crazy. They'll eat anything. So soon as I think they can sort of handle cutlery, we'll get them one of those kids sets, you know, and that kind of thing. And I'm sure, you know, just by being around my wife and I, who are, you know, again, hugely interested in food and obviously the knives, I'm sure they will. It's just osmosis. What's around them, I'm sure they will.
Well, that brings me to a point of like, once in a while, I'll have a customer ask me, my son is going to be a Boy Scout or something like that. And I do, do you make anything? And I have made small camping knives, like little paring knife style knives for Boy Scouts and stuff like that. I think that I always do get a little nervous. I'm going to be very vague about this, but I did have someone in the neighborhood who came to my shop and wanted a mini cleaver. And I said to this person, what do you mean a mini cleaver? He goes, you know, a little mini cleaver. I'm like, for what? He goes, don't worry about it. And I said, how old are you? He says, I'm, 15. I'm like, I'm not making you a mini cleaver. What do you need a mini cleaver for? He's like, because it's cool. I'm like, I'm not making you a mini cleaver. You're too young. You got to get permission from your parents. I ain't doing it. So I got a message from the parents. Why won't you sell my son a knife? And I was like, what is he going to do? What is he going to cut the cheese with the mini cleaver? What is he going to like butcher small pigeons? What do you want from me? Like, it felt very uncomfortable. He was a pain in the ass and I felt uncomfortable about it. And I was just like, yeah. It was a judgment call. I ain't making you a mini anything. Leave me alone.
Fair enough. Mareko, I've just sent you a link in the Skype chat there of those Le Petit Chefs, which as you can see, I think they'd be pretty cool for your son.
Actually, when you sent that link, I had a little slight panic attack. I thought maybe something was going on. It was like, that's why I was just like, I don't know, she's getting older. All of a sudden, there's this like, bright blue and the light lettering. I'm like, I don't know what the hell's going on.
We've been flagged.
Yeah.
We've got a question from the pragmatic redneck saying, "Hey cuties, can I ask you a question? When making a stock removal knife, do you remove all the material with the grinder or do you remove the bulk with the bandsaw or something similar?" Right angle grinder for me.
No.
As much as I can with that and then finish up on the grinder for the rest of the profile.
Sure. Yep. That's what I've done in the past, as well as I have a little porter band set up, like a upright bandsaw, vertical bandsaw, and I've also done the same thing, trimming away the excess material with that and then doing the rest profiling on the grinder. Yeah.
I hate using a right angle grinder. I do it for very thick stock, but I usually, like Mareko said, I have a porta band and I try to take the majority off with the porta band.
I still haven't got around to buying one. I need one. It's one of those things on the list, but they're pretty expensive here, and I've been looking, like in the US, I know you can get them pretty cheap, but over here that you don't see them around much.
I wouldn't say they're cheap. I mean, you can get them used cheap. I mean, you can get I've said this before. There's a repair guy, and people bring their tools in to get repaired, and when they get the bill, they all walk out. So he's got like a pile of shit. So anytime I always stop on by. That's why I got some Metabo grinders for half the price, but I also got a replacement portaband for $150 used. And reason why the portabands are good here is because the blades are readily available. Like there are certain hardware stores where you can run out and get one because you don't have a long life on those blades. You can't do 10 knives on one blade because the blades are so short, really. But the convenience of being able to run out and get one makes it worth it for me.
Is it the speed they run at which makes them acceptable for steel?
Well, I mean,
just a slower speed.
The porta bands were meant for, I mean, the first time I ever saw a porta band was when I was in a metal shop and we were doing installation work. Like when we had to set posts for a rail or usually for outside, if you had to cut off an inch or there, you put your posts on the back of the truck and then you scribe your line. The reason why they're portable is you can lift them up and move them around. So they're not typically for the way knife makers use them. They're much easier for being portable and making trim jobs. So I think that the concept is they really were not meant for hardened steel or tool steel or, they're meant for like cutting posts and, install guys.
Yeah. I wonder if you had a VFD on a standard bandsaw, whether that would do the same
thing. Well, you do have control over the speed. You can't. There's usually a knob on the trigger, and it can go slower or go faster.
Yeah. Yeah, if you get a hold of those Lennox portaband bandsaw blades, and we're not sponsored by them, but they are really good. And I'm using the same blade that I used to cut out the mammoth tooth, which was surprisingly difficult on the porta band. And I did cut out, did some like 10 stock removal blades off of that. And I've been splitting handle material. I've been cutting down metal pieces. The Lennox really goes a long way. I think I'm doing I got this 14 TPI teeth per inch. It's still chugging away.
The carbon steel always cuts a lot easier than the stainless steel. In my experience. Yeah. So, and the other thing is with the portaband is it's very, very, very important to have a table. Like you want to have, whole, I used to put it in the vise and then I would have like a little pincher to pinch the trigger. That little table that it comes with, it's not a table, it's like a guide. That is a very dangerous way to work off of. So I actually got super, super dangerous. It's like, 2 inches by, 3 inches, and it's not flat. I mean, it's just like it's not meant for that. So I actually got one of those pre-made tables that you mount it to. And I got that because I had it in a post vise and I was jet lagged and I was cutting the heads off the Corbies and I put my finger through the bandsaw and I had to go to the hospital. So I had to promise my wife that I'd make it safer. So I got one of those tables.
First class ticket.
That's right. First class ticket. Yeah, you can't touch a bandsaw blade and think that it's going to be okay. Touching a bandsaw blade while it's going is definitely for the worst. Is not. There's no like oopsies there. It's like right through.
Yeah. All right. This next one is from at York Knife. He says, "Do you still get worried when you send out your custom knives and you don't hear back from the customer with the obligatory just received the knife you made for me and it's fabulous email. I do.
I have done myself. In the past, yeah. And I mean, I don't do that anymore, really. I don't really do, you know, single knives anymore. But in the past, yeah, that would always, I knew as soon as I'd shipped, I'd always be on sort of edge for the next, you know, few days, knowing that they've received it, because I've had some go astray in the past, and, you know. So it's mainly a case of just knowing that they've received it rather than that they're happy with it. But yeah, thankfully, things have changed now, whereas, you know, they're restaurant orders, so I'm generally hand-delivering and that kind of thing. So I get immediate sort of reaction. But yeah, you certainly get that sort of feeling in the pit of your stomach when you ship things, like, oh, I hope this goes well.
I don't get emails. I get maybe 1 in 15 customers will send me a thank you email. Like, I mean,
you need to make better knives, Jeff.
Yeah, clearly. Well, I mean, they're not complaining. I'll take nothing over a complaint. You know, saying this. I hate this fucking thing. I mean, I usually get like, oh, we received it. It's great or whatever. I just, a lot of people don't send a thank you. Not that they need to, but I know that feeling of like, well, they didn't say anything, or maybe these are terrible and they're not saying anything, or not so amazing they're saying anything. Mm. You know, if I'm sending out like, you know, 10 knives a week, you know, I'm not getting one email back. I mean, maybe I'm getting an email back saying, oh, we really enjoyed the process, blah, blah, blah. And it does make you feel like, well, what the fuck's wrong with it? They don't say anything. But at the same time, you know, I end up having, fuck it. They didn't complain. So, you know, they're happy with it, if I guess.
No news is good news.
Or, yeah, well, I'm sorry. But I mean, sometimes it's true. So sometimes once in a while, people, you know, they'll put me on a Instagram story or whatever, and that's always fun. Or I'll bump into someone who's got my knife, and then say, oh, by the way, you know, love the knife, still using it, or you know. But I do get that pit in the stomach when I don't hear anything, and it's just like, you gotta, like, you know, get past it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, so there you go. That's the answer for that. Next question. this one comes from Will Robert 6. Is there anything you do differently for the cutting edge of a steak knife set, since it'll likely be used on ceramic plates and dull faster? Love the show. Keep up the good work. So are you doing anything for your steak knife edge? This is a good one for you, Craig.
Nothing different at all. So the edges I set at 15 degrees, the final bevels at 15 degrees. And no, nothing different at all. But that is quite telling what you said there about they're likely to be used on ceramic plates and they'll dull faster. That is the case, which is why people used to have serrated blades before we had these better steels and so on. But what I do now, because my customers are restaurants, I've just started this week, actually. I was talking about it with my wife and, you know, how can we get continued business, that kind of thing. So what we're doing, we're offering restaurants, is a six-monthly refresh. So after 6 months, I'll go in for free. I'll resharpen the knives for them. I mean, they probably would have been sharpened within 6 months anyway. And, you know, rebuff the handles. And basically, that's a reason to get in and try and upsell them. Make sure they're happy with the knives. And if they're happy, they're like, oh, well, we could do some butter knives that match. We can, you know, and it's maintaining that relationship. So, but yeah, with regards to the actual edge, no, they're just a standard 15 degrees. I've got like I use a Tormek for my sharpening. I've got this, the Japanese wheel, which is the 2000 grit. On a 15 degree angle set, and it seems to work fine.
So you go over to the shop and then you bring everything over there direct, or you bring them back?
Well, I'm quite fortunate that I've got two Tormek, so I've left one in the UK now. So most of the restaurants that I'm doing stuff for are in the UK, hardly anything here in France. So I fly over because it's very, very cheap. Yeah, so,
super,
you know,
cheap.
$10 flight.
Oh,
it's
my
super,
God.
Super cheap.
Jesus.
Well, I'm flying over this Thursday. I'm flying over into London, and it's costing me €15 return.
Oh, my God.
And a euro is around about a dollar at the moment, so that's $15 return to London.
You can't,
that's crazy.
That is absurd. You can't take a train from my town of Peekskill into Manhattan for $16. Yeah. You can't take a fucking bullshit, smelly, loud, disgusting train for $15.
Crazy.
Yeah, what is it? It's like $25.
It's that last mile. That last mile is what costs. So once I've landed, getting to wherever I'm going in a taxi or whether it's a train, that's always at least double what I paid for the plane. You know, crazy.
Listen, so you show up to these guys' restaurants before service?
I've got the little Tormek that I take with me, the little 4-inch Tormek. I'll take that, bang, sharpen them up, give everything a little polish, and say, look, aren't these great? Wouldn't it be great if you had some matching butter knives, or you know, different type of steak knives for your chef's table, for example, or so on. You know, just try and upsell
them. That is a very good service. Ooh. That you're offering. Do you have any of the cooks ever say, hey man, you give my chef knife a lick?
No, well, as I just mentioned, we're only just starting it. So we talked about it this week. So I'm flying into London on Thursday, and I'm meeting a restaurant there, which I've already sold to. So I'm gonna do some there. And yeah, I can't see why it wouldn't work if they're happy with the knives and you're giving them a good service. You know, after a year or so, they're probably going to be looking for something else. Maybe.
That's great. That's a good thing right there.
Mm. And another reason as well, actually, for flying in to see restaurants is I always get on the phone beforehand and find other restaurants locally. And I say, look, I'm in the area. I'm a knife maker. Can I just come in and show you my knives? And generally, most chefs are interested anyway. They're like, yeah, of course, come on in. You know, come in at sort of 11 o'clock before service. We're setting up. So you go in and they say, well, if you're in France, why are you here? You say, oh, I'm just delivering knives to so-and-so around the corner. Oh, let me have a look. So they're having a look at the knives, and they get the envy then because they know a restaurant around the corner has got these knives. They're like, oh, we need to up our game. And then, you know, it's all a sort of selling strategy, I suppose.
That's great.
Yeah.
There you go.
Seems to work.
Very good.
Plus, they probably feed you well, don't they?
You know what? The dozens of restaurants that I've been to in the last few months, only three have fed me.
Those fuckers.
Exactly. Yeah, some of these guys...
Tight.
I have gone to some high-end restaurants to bring a chef knife. I bring a chef knife, a chef, and then they don't offer me. They don't offer anything. I'm like, okay, great. And then we go to the restaurant to sit down. They gave us a bill. Eh, look, these guys don't care.
Okay, yeah. Jesse Savage Blacksmith has sent in the question.
What?
Jesse Savage. I think this is specifically for you, Jeff.
Doesn't he have his own podcast he can bother people with?
I know, he must have way too much time on his hands. Go ahead. Way too much time. So Jesse Savage Blacksmith says, he heard last night that Jeff said that he could beat Craig in a 5K. Can we make this happen? he didn't really say that, but I did hear Jeff say that last night.
I didn't say 5K.
Life.
I said, well, I was on a... Well, you want to go into it? We can go into it. But I thought you would... I'm just saying that I feel in like a... 10K half marathon situation, I beat the both of you. That's all.
But that's with your old man handicap. You'd have a 5-minute handicap.
I don't need any handicap. I'm fucking tight as a drum. I'm feeling good, light and good. Go back to Jesse's question. You
Jesse
competitive guy. You.
Do you plan on forging knives as part of the demo at Maker's Camp? Can we do a knife or an axe or a throw-in demo? And at Maker Camp and throw them at Damascus Dave.
Wow. Shots fired.
He's trolling his co-host on a different podcast.
Yeah.
Wow.
Dave's not a co-host. Dave's the manager of the Blacksmith's Pub.
Ah,
so
I see.
So Jesse, we'll be forging knives. In regards to throwing things, I'm not planning on throwing anything, but that's for you to decide. Jesse. Actually, I'm going to be sharing a room with Jesse. Thank God for Chris Cash, because Jesse and I are going to be sharing a room. So get ready. There you go.
Oh, didn't get a room with Damascus Dave?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think Dave's gotten a room, to be honest with you. If you really want to get things crazy, I think he's just coming for the day. Yeah. Dave's a good dude. I like Dave. He actually told me, I'm going to give you a radio tease. He told me and the Modern Forge guys one of the craziest stories I'd ever heard. My respect for Dave went through the roof. I can't tell you the story because it's too crazy. There you go. He's a real guy. He's a real good dude.
Yeah, cool story, bro.
Cool story, bro. It was a cool story, bro. You got to grab, when you see Damascus Dave, ask him to tell that story about what happened to him in high school. There you go. Radio tease. That's your problem, right, though, Dave.
This next one I think is for you guys mostly. It's from Fake Photon, and he says, hey guys, what are the pros and cons of working with micarta? How does it compare with other handmade materials, for example, stabilized wood?
Never used it.
Well, I mean, you could kind of throw micarta and G10 in the same... I throw them in the same kind of... in the same world. They're like brother and sister, you know?
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I used it once on a knife maybe about a month or two ago. Hated it. Absolutely hated it. It got really hot easily, and I really don't like those, you know, the lines that you see, because obviously it's a layered material. So when you grind at an angle, you're going to see these layers. I really didn't like it, so I don't think I'll be using it again, to be honest with you. But I know some people love it, and you know, it's a preference. But for me, I prefer a stabilized wood or a really nice hardwood.
The only micarta I really use is I like tan canvas micarta. I don't really like the way linen micarta looks. I do like green, olive green micarta. I love G10, and one of the reasons why is because if you're doing a set, because these G10 people, whoever's making them, they're all pretty close to, the colors are pretty close. So when you're making sets, it makes it a lot easier to kind of everything to match. And after you grind them, I think that they hand sand very quickly. Like finishing is very quick. I also like the contrasting colors. If you play with the colors, that's something I've always liked. So, but now sure. I've been using more wood lately, and I'm kind of interested in the wood more.
Yeah.
So I like it all. I don't like a lot of that. Sorry, I don't like light colors because they're very hard to clean, and I don't like and they do, you know, some micarta, like, God forbid you ever use fake ivory linen micarta. That's like, I mean, you might want to like, you know, give it all up. You want to give it all up after using that stuff.
I think comparison wise, the micarta is definitely more dense and more resistant to fluctuations in temperature and moisture and stuff like that. But I personally like micarta just fine, but I definitely prefer wood and other natural materials just because I like the feel, like it feels warm when you pick it up, and I don't know, it doesn't have kind of like a colder feel to it, but that's just my own personal thing.
And it's got character. It's got character. It's got a lot of character, and I understand. Hey guys, if you're hand sanding or you're finishing, or even if you're using a disc sander and you want to use something good, go get yourself some Rhino Wet from Indasa USA. It's really, really well constructed paper. I've been using it. The Mareko and Craig have been using it. And a lot of people, when they get it, they realize it is better and it saves you time and energy when you're hand sanding or you're finishing stuff. So Indasa USA makes Rhino Wet. It's awesome material. And you can actually go get it at Texas Farrier Supply. And if Texas Farrier Supply, they're redoing their website's all redone. And you can use Knife Talk 10 for 10% off on your Rhino Wet and all your products that you buy from Texas Farrier Supply. I just got a couple blacksmithing punches. And I used the Knife Talk 10, and I got 10% off those punches. Sell a lot of knife making equipment. They sell a lot of farrier supplies. There's a lot of stuff for knife makers. They're really focusing on knife makers. So Texas Farrier Supply, Knife Talk 10 gets you 10% off on all your products, plus Rhino Wet from Indasa USA. Thanks, guys.
Hey, you know what you should do?
Hey, you. This is the part of the conversation where we hear your advice on what we should be doing, some tips and tricks and whatever you want to call it. So we're going to kick it off with Vashon Knives. Here's a quick tip, he says. When you think you're finished sanding a knife handle, rub on a very thin coat of your preferred wood finish and then wipe it off. Hold the handle under good light and you'll see all the scratches you missed. Then go back down a grit and fix them, because let's be honest, we always miss some in the some on the first go. Thanks, you guys. Love the show. I will corroborate his story. I've definitely that's the frustrating part sometimes, is feeling like you got it all done. You start doing those finishing coats and you're like, oh, fuck, what's that? And you got to get back into the handle, start sanding things back out. But that is a good tip. Just a little bit of oil of some sort will really kind of highlight anything you might have missed.
Noah's a good dude. Noah's a good dude.
We got another one from Keenan869. He says he likes the idea of more content, but instead of having a bunch of small episodes, he's giving us advice.
Yeah, he's literally saying, you know what you should do. You should do us. Hey, man, you know what you should do? Go ahead.
But instead of having a bunch of small episodes, another idea could be a second question only episode that has the EDC content rolled into one. Because while driving or working, it's nicer to be able to just select a new episode and leave it. Just an idea, but I'm a big fan of the podcast. I keep the great content very informative and entertaining. So what he's saying is, rather than split up our EDCs into, you know, these small chunks, we should just do a Hey Man, Can I Ask You a Question podcast, we just fill them up. Yeah, I mean, it's something that we could have done. There's no reason why we couldn't. But I just like the idea of every day people know there's just something there, yeah. You know, and that's quite nice. And, you know, our sponsors like it too, let's be fair, because we mention the sponsors in each show as well. So it works well for everyone, I think.
Keenan, I think it's a great idea. I think we should do podcasts every single day. I think we should do a four-hour show every
Six
day.
6 hours, yeah.
Guess
yeah.
what?
Yeah.
We're going to make you pay, Keenan. You got to make you pay because this is a lot of time and energy and we're trying to give as much as we can, but I personally don't want to do Patreon for our listeners. I don't want there to be a paywall for you guys and we're trying to make this work. So yeah. This comes from, I know you're sending this to us from a place of peace and love, but that's the way it is. So there you go. All right. This one comes from, oh, listen to this. Here's one that comes from Spicy Mike. AKA Seventh Dragon Knifeworks. Here's a tip that I guess a lot of people didn't realize. I'm saying it like I would think that Spicy Mike would say it. Just showed someone this earlier today. If you don't have a file guide, you can spend the money for one or just use your vice. The jaws are hardened so a file skates right over them, but it will bite into the steel. Just file your shoulders in prior to quenching. So he's basically using the jaws of his vice to, if you're just, for, but you can't, it don't work for the, hey, Spicy, it don't work for the blade. It works for your connection between your tang and the bolster. Like he was using it for, to squaring off the shoulders of the knife.
Right. Okay. I've got you.
There
yeah.
you go.
Yeah. And obviously, you need to be careful because you know a grip is going to have you know grip lines in there, and it could leave things. But yeah, it's a good idea.
Who's that in
idea.
The background? Somebody.
That's my dog is going mental outside for some reason.
squirrel.
Ted, be quiet.
You sure that wasn't Deep Dive? Our Milfoy, the Deep Dive lady.
I've got a lock in the basement. Yeah. Clawing away, trying to get out.
Hey, man, can I ask you a question? No, that's not what she does. All right, go ahead.
Okay. This next one is from Garage Knife Shop. He says, I got a tip for starting knife makers that might not want to spend a ton of money on a grinder. Get a 4x36 and use an angle grinder to cut the edges square for plunge lines. I think we actually might have talked about that before on the podcast. But he's basically talking about usually those 4x36 belt grinders, they have the off the edge of the belt, it extends like another maybe half an inch or whatever, and then it rounds down to the side. You can just use an angle grinder and cut a little bit of material away to get in there and get right up to the edge of the belt.
Nice. That's you know. Look, you gotta. Sometimes there's a little manipulation is what you have to do for all these things.
Yeah, make it work.
Whatever
Any
it takes.
Use of the angle grinder is approved by me.
All right, there you go. Now start sending your memes to him with all the angle right angle grinder memes. I'm done with them.
Silver Tip Forge sends another tip. You know what you should do? Use a router in a table to contour wood, G10, and micarta handle scales. Rounding bits are great for the final grip. Yeah, I think especially if you're doing sort of tactical knives where you can take the handles off. If not, then obviously you know you need to sort of grind down to the spines and so on. If it's a full tang knife, so you wouldn't be able to. But if it's those removable handles, that'd be great. Why not?
Scary, because you have to like you have the router table. The router's up because I know this because I knew back in the day I knew some lure makers who when they would make their lures they'd cut the lures out and then they would make like a little fixture to hold with their hands so they could just run it around the router bit and it would break all the corners. But it was like, I mean, that's dicey. You know, you're holding this little piece of wood or whatever material and you gotta. Watch.
They spin quick, those routers.
Oh, dude, you got to watch those fingers. Otherwise, it's like, you know, terrible. I didn't have a joke but terrible.
You know what this has turned into? You know what you should do?
Go ahead.
People send it in tips, then us trying to sort of devalue their tips. I'm sure all these tips are brilliant, but, you know, they're not always
we
fresh.
Need to change it to, we need to figure that out. Yeah, I love that. I love the fact that you're sending in our tips and we're telling you how bad they are.
No, it's a good tip, but it wouldn't work for the type of stuff I do.
Maybe you should change this bit to, you know what you should do? No, I don't. Or not doing it right.
We're just making people feel shitty. That's all
it is. I love it. It's the reverse. It's like, you know what you should do? No. No, I don't know what I should do. Go ahead. No, I'm not doing that. Yeah. You know what you should do? No, I'm not doing that. Okay.
Joshua, Prince Forge Works has sent in. He actually sent in a bunch of videos, or they were audio. I can't remember. It was a bunch of messages. But the synopsis is behind it is, blend the size of your Damascus billets with a grinding wheel so you don't get coal shits and you seal out the oxygen.
There you go.
Yeah. So. Does that make sense? I can't quite work that out myself.
So he when he puts I saw the video. So when he MIG welds all the layers together, sometimes you have a little bit of sometimes some are wider than the other, so it's not super super flat. So he was grinding down all the profiles, so
the stack is square.
Right.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah, so the sides are flat. Well, and that makes sense because then the burr that's created off the edge of each little piece kind of overlaps the next one and kind of reduces the opportunity of oxygen getting in between the layers.
Yeah.
It's good.
He's a clever guy. Smart guy.
All right. Here, this one comes from Kyle Daly, KH Daly Knives. Here's a tip when using liners on knives. You want to get that shiny surface. Well, liners, meaning like G10 or you want to get the shiny surface off so the epoxy or glue can bond to it easier. I buy G10 pieces in sheets 12 by 12 or bigger, and I use a 5-inch random orbital sander to rough up the surface of the G10. Then I can cut these up to larger sheets to more manageable sizes, 5 by 12. This goes much faster and easier when the pieces are cut up for the knife handles. So basically, he'll buy a sheet when he's making liners and stuff. He'll buy the sheets, and he'll hit all the shiny side up with an orbital sander, then run it through the table saw, because then you don't have to do one little piece at a time. I actually did that for the Banditos because I was cutting through just a ridiculous amount of G10, and I hit everything with the grinder first, orbital sander, and then I ran it through, and then when I started to glue them up, I didn't have to go back and clean them all up again. Yeah, it was good.
Nice. Yeah, good time saver.
There you go. So, you know, the funny thing is after the last two, I felt guilty about like going after everybody's tips. So we're like backing off a lot. So just know that we just did the last two. We backed off.
We're not in approving.
Yes, that was a very good tip.
Well, no, I disapprove of this next one.
No additions necessary, but here it comes. Let's go.
All right. This next one from Goat's Eye Knives. He says, turn your buffers around so your wheel is spinning away from you. Cuts back on the overall scariness. My issue with that is then you are basically buffing blind and you can't really see where the buffer is actually contacting versus, I guess, the buffer turning towards you and down towards the ground, is that you can kind of look over the side of the blade that you're buffing, right? And you can see what you're buffing.
Surely if it grips, it's going to send the blade up into your face rather than down to the floor. Surely that's more dangerous.
I assume that if he has it turning the other direction, he's doing it on top. Kind of like how the Tormach works.
Ah, I see.
And then it would... But at the same time, you can't really see what you're doing.
So what he's saying is you should have the buffer turning the top coming towards you, so it should be going counterclockwise.
It should be going up.
What do you mean up? They're both going up. Wait.
So I think he means a buffer like on a bench grinder.
Yeah. So you want
like
so
a 6-inch wheel or whatever. Rather than spinning down towards you, he means up and away from you.
I like down. I like it going down. Because if it's gonna fly, it's gonna fly down.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I didn't buy these amazing shoes for nothing. If this is going to be, it's going to be these special shoes.
Yeah, you got them old lady shoes. You have what's the best thing you have on your feet?
Yeah, Wayne Browning _ Blades. Here's a tip for you. He uses a magnifying lens with a light on it for grinding, so file work or any work I need to see up close. So the light has a clamp on the base, which clamps to the workbench. With a flexible arm, you can put it right where you need it.
There you go.
Yeah, like jewelers use, or that kind of thing.
There you go.
Right. That's good. Actually, that reminds me, I just had to replace my headlamp that I had attached or fixed to the face of my respirator. And what I did, so what I ended up getting was a pen light, an LED pen light that had a little pocket clip on it. And I just clipped that to one of my little respirator cans, the pads, and or the filter. And it shoots light straight down to where I'm working perfectly. And it's handy because I can just slide it back off and use it somewhere else in the shop, or if I'm looking down into the tank slot of a hidden tank handle or anything like that. So
nice little use. Nice.
Yeah. This next one is from Joel Iverson. He says, "Hey man, you know what you should do? Shape knife handles with an angle grinder."
That's a rough situation.
Let's just move on then.
Community showcase.
That's a rough situation right there.
Wowzers. Yeah, I have seen people shaping wood with angle grinders, and you just think, what the hell? It's just burning shit everywhere, and there's smoke everywhere. It's not good.
I used to use angle grinders to grind sculpture, to move a lot of material, because I knew that I was going to, like, it was to rough move sculpture. And I was sending dust all over the place, but I was leaving all these like little gouges all over the place. So I would think that using a grinder to do your handles, you gotta have a pretty smooth move, you know. Otherwise, you're gonna turn it into a disaster.
Sure. Well, and I think it just comes down to what you're most comfortable with. And like Neil Kamimura, when he first started doing knife making, he had never used a belt grinder. And so he did a lot of his grinding with an angle grinder because that's what he used for doing body work on cars. Yeah. And so that's what he was really comfortable with using. And he was getting some decent shapes and contours on that. And it's just... It does throw sawdust all over the fucking place, but, you know, it gets it done.
Well, believe it or not, you know, I know that everyone thinks that, you know, using a grinder is like using a hammer when you're forging. Everyone seems to think you use it. But I mean, when I was in metal shops, there were different, you know, techniques we were using to feather in welds or to break corners. Mm-hmm. And you weren't just like, you know, going off like a crazy person. There were like, you know, there was one point where you would turn it on, and to break a corner, we would actually, as you were making the turn, you'd turn off the grinder so it would stop while you're grinding. There's a lot of, like, especially for fabrication, there are ways to use a grinder that gives you the most efficient way to go. But I think a lot of people just, like, cowboy it and go, like, you know, balls to the wall and turns into, like, a gougy, burned-up thing.
Yeah. For sure.
Well, we've had a tip left on our hotline.
Hello?
Hey, guys. It's Jeremy at Arngall up in Canada. This is a tip, I guess. Anyway, there's nothing that really sucks worse than hand sanding. And I read on a couple forums that people using orbital sanders. It's sort of a way to speed the process up. Anyway, I was pretty skeptical, but I did try it out. I went from off the belts at about 120 and then onto 120 orbital sander discs and just kind of grind into them with it. You can really lean into it and then go up through 220, 400, up to about 600 with the orbital discs. And then, man, it does a really good job. Surprising. Of course, then you have those little J hook scratches, but it's easy enough to then switch over to straight laps with a piece of sandpaper, go 6, 8, 1,000, and that sort of realigns all your scratch lines, heal the tip, gets rid of all those little orbital J scratches, and lets you kind of jump through the sort of 200 to 600 grit stages. Anyway, might not be as useful for everyone else, but I think it's really helped me out. Anyway, guys, love the podcast. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Nice.
That's a good one.
There we go.
I've done that before.
Yeah, that's good.
Random orbital sander from 200 onwards.
I mean, it's basically a handheld disc sander for the most part. I mean, they usually have a softer backing, but, you know, I've done that before.
Community Showcase.
Community Showcase. So this is the bit where we like to give a shout out to people or things, anything that where we want to sort of highlight within the community. Now, I haven't done any homework this week, so I haven't got one. Mareko, do you have one?
I do. All right. So I first met this guy and heard of him on the Kitchen Knife forums, which is very aptly named. But he is a knife. He is a knife enthusiast. He's a collector, but he also started getting into handle making, and he does a lot of kind of traditional Japanese style octagonal handles, and he does all these really cool and kind of fun combinations, but he does a beautiful job. He's not really on the knife maker side of the thing. So he makes these handles and sells them, and he's a very talented craftsman from Russian. And he's on Instagram as Iken Has Cheeseburger, which is a funny name. That's the same handle he uses, I believe, on the Kitchen Knife forums. But if you go take a look at his work, he does some really phenomenal stuff, and his prices are pretty reasonable. It's like, I think last I knew it was like $30, maybe $40 a handle, and you're going to be hard up to get even just a block of wood for $30 to $40, let alone a completed handle that basically, you know, you slap onto your knife once you finish it up. And so, yeah, I just wanted to give him some love because I really like and appreciate his work.
Very cool. Well, I'd like to give a shout out to a good homie of ours, Ashley Childs. Ashley Childs is she's an awesome person. She's a knife maker at the New West Knife Works in Wyoming. She's a student of Seth Gould. She's a great blacksmith. It's always good to see, you know, positive people out in the world. And she's a blacksmith, and she lives out in Wyoming, and she makes hammers, and she works at this knife shop, and she's a very positive person. And I am totally. AC is good to me. I'm with her, and follow Ashley Childs. She's a great little blacksmith, and it's great to see her doing all the things that she's doing.
Yeah, I saw that she was following me the other day, and I was like, who is this? And I pulled her up, and she's got all this really cool. Her feed's really neat. Yeah. Looks like she travels all over and is learning from a lot of different craftsmen. But yeah, I saw she's working at New West Knives, and she does good work, it looks like.
Yeah, no, she's a good, you know, she's a very all-around, she's an all-around interesting person. And she, like I said, she was a student of Seth Gould's, who reached out to us after listening to her. We gave him a shout out, and that was really cool. And AC's good for me. I'm with her. Really cool.
So I remember you can get links to these profiles on the website. So with the episode, the page where this episode is on, there'll be links there, so you can get straight to their Instagram.
We've got beef.
Oh, good. There you go. What else is there to say?
Yeah, we got beef. So this is where we kind of air our grievances and frustrations a little bit. And I think Craig wants to kick us off with this one.
Yeah. So I mentioned at the top of the show that I'll be doing a lot of grinding this week. So first off, I started the week finishing off a bunch of handles, which was this sort of plastic material that I've been working with for this restaurant. They come out really nice, really happy with them. But my beef is friction. Things getting hot and things just not doing what you want them to do.
Yeah, girl.
Of friction.
Yeah, girl. Go ahead.
Oh,
go
God,
ahead, girl.
Jeez. Fuck science. That's what I say, because friction is making my life a nightmare. So I've been working with this plastic, which I've sort of, I wouldn't say I've developed, but a new way of using this plastic. And when you're using Corby's or pins or whatever it is, that material will get hot when you're grinding them down, and those little tiny grind spots, you know, there's little bits that you grind out, are just being embedded into the plastics.
Oh.
So I've had to really slow things down. And when you've got a bunch of knives to get through, it's a nightmare. So friction can go fuck itself.
Oh.
So that's one instance of friction really messing me up this week. And the second one is just when you're just grinding knives, when you've got like a stack of, you know, 60 to go through, and you're just going through grind by grind, you know, coming down the grits and so on, and you've got your dip tank, and you're just constantly fighting the heat, and it's just, yeah, fuck science and fuck friction.
Wow. Jeez, that's a hard thing to say right there.
I do know that pain. Do you have a way of trimming the Corbies down a little shorter before you start grinding on them?
I don't, and that's we just talked about having a porter band. That's what I need.
That would be
a game changer for you.
Oh, dude, it changed the way. I mean, I felt that way because you know the brass, especially it just takes so much heat. But I mean, if you can, that's a good idea too. That's not a bad idea at all. Trim them off with
what
an angle.
That? I missed that.
He said trim them off with an angle grinder.
Ooh, it's a bit close to the bone then, isn't it? When you know.
Your whole last 5 minutes have been a little bit angry sexy at the same time. Close to the bone and fuck friction.
Angry sexy?
And, yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry if I'm turning you on, Jeff.
Not
it's just the way
anything.
I am.
Come on, man. But it generally seemed a little bit like fuck friction and fuck science and I hate all this hard, hot friction and it's close too close to the bone. And it's getting a little bit crazy over there in France.
I need to get out. Morocco, have you got a beef?
Yeah, so this is kind of my own. Mostly it's me being frustrated at myself, but it's so I was doing some laundry the other day. I wash my clothes separate from everybody else's because I come home from the shop covered in all kinds of like metal shavings and nastiness that, you know, we don't need that stuff getting on my son's clothes. And my sister was here visiting this last week, and I started this giant load of laundry and got caught up with helping with dinner and then hanging out afterwards, and I completely forgot to start drying the clothes until later that night, and it did the whole thing where it gets all nasty and has that musky, musty kind of nasty smell. And I went to work the next day with one of those shirts on, and it's such a horrible smell. It's the worst. And so my beef is with clothes getting stinky from leaving them in the wash for too long. But
that reminds me of school. You know, you go to school on a rainy day and you got your school coat and you put it down next to the radiator and it just smells pissy, like, you know, for the rest of the day. Ugh.
What do you do to your clothes? What are you talking about, pissy?
Did you grow up with cats?
No, you know, that sort of damp and it hasn't quite dried yet. And, you know, the next day, you know, you don't wash your school coat every day. So you go into school the next day and everybody smells a bit pissy, you know? Ugh.
I started to notice that something was wrong with our washer, and I had to take it apart. I had to take apart the drain and pull out a lot of the stuff because our clothes were starting to smell bad. That's not a good feeling. But I felt like a champion because my wife was like, "You fixed the washing machine." I'm like, "You're goddamn right I did. There you go." Yeah. My beef isn't an angry beef. It's just I don't understand. For some reason, LOL has become punctuation. So somebody will text me, and they'll say something and they'll end the sentence with LOL. And I don't really, it doesn't ever make any sense to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, see you down at the bar, LOL. Why? I don't understand. Like, I don't understand why. So we get these messages a lot. And I get a lot of messages and a lot of texts from people, and they throw LOL all the time. Do you need it? Is it necessary?
Do you think they're really laughing out loud as they're talking?
I don't know. It's just like, you know, I got a friend, not really a friend, but kind of a friend who he writes sigh all the time. Like S-I-G-H, as in like, like he puts that in his writing, and I'm just like, you know, you don't have to do that. I don't need to picture you feeling like, you know, how you're feeling when you write this. Yeah. Sigh. I'm saying, fuck you, man. I don't need to know. I don't want to know, and I don't need to know. And LOL is the same thing. It's like, I know. And when I messaged Tomer, I said, well, what do you want me to say about this job? And I can tell there's going to be a pile of people writing to me. Tomer, I live in America. I wish I could be there, LOL. And in my mind, I know that he's going to get a pile of emails and with the punctuation being LOL. I don't get it. I don't get it. It makes no sense to me, and you will never hear me ever use. You don't ever see me write LOL. You don't need to know. You don't need to know my inner feelings. You don't.
Old man.
Wow.
Old
I mean, seriously, trust me. Trust me. The time you see me write LOL, you'll know that my phone has been hacked. That is a fact. My favorite emoji is now that I've been using it forever, and if you ever see, I love the
aubergine.
No, the fucking no, I don't. no, I like the cheersing champagne glasses. because that's that's my emoji for I'm with you, and it leaves me alone. Like that cheers emoji basically says, "All right, we're done this conversation. Conversation over." That's my LOL. Cheers, cheersing champagne.
Nice. That's nearly a show. We got time just for my favorite bit.
Hey cuties, what's the best thing you've had in your mouth this week?
She got a little bit of funk in the morning. That's a morning voice right there.
What's the best thing you've had in your mouth? Mareka, why don't you kick us off? What's the best thing you've eaten this week?
Oh, let's see. Actually, we just did birthday stuff for my wife last night, and we did pizzas. And one of the pizzas, so over here we got this like ready-made pizza place called Papa Murphy's. I don't think they exist over on the East Coast.
There's no Papa Murphy's on the East Coast. There is no Papa Murphy's on the East Coast.
Okay. So they do all like they stretch out the dough and they top the pizzas and all this stuff. And there's this one pizza that they do there. It's the Thai chicken. And it's like a sweet Thai chili sauce with chicken and zucchini, onion, garlic. And it's super delicious. And so I'd have to say that is the... That's probably the best thing I had to this last
week. I gotta tell you, I'm really glad you explained it because I thought you called it the tight chicken.
The tight chicken.
I had some tight chicken. I had a tight chicken pizza. I'm like, what the fuck is a tight chicken? I actually
some tight chicken in my mouth.
I had some good. Some of my favorite chicken is in the Caribbean. We call it street chicken because those chickens down there in the Caribbean are a little bit on the thin side and they have a lot of flavor. We used to call them street chicken, so I thought maybe it was close to a street chicken.
Tight.
Don't they call that jerk chicken?
Well, yeah, we're getting into recipes here. Speaking of chicken, I'll say that I was at Finn and Brew a couple nights ago, and they were closing the kitchen, and I didn't realize it. I was with some friends, and I was talking to the bartender, and I said, can we get some wings? And they said, the kitchen's closed, and the bartender mentioned to the sous chef, David, thank you, David, and he came out with, he just surprised us with some teriyaki-glazed chicken wings, and they were awesome. And I was they were really, really great. I'm not eating a lot of meat, so when I do, I enjoy the shit out of it. So I had some fucking kick-ass wings over at Finn and Brew. And just to let you know, I don't find anything, I'm not interested in anything I make, like the paella, it ain't going to be my favorite thing I ate all week, that's for sure. I like shit that other people make.
Mine is this week, something I made. So it's that time of the year now where summer's it's coming to an end and the evenings are getting a little bit colder. So we're like, we want something really comforting tonight. What are we going to eat? So I cooked it. They were just, pretty standard, just meatballs and in a ragu sauce, but we did gnocchi with it and so on. And it was just... Because we've had a summer, and it's been a hot summer, and it's been, lots of salad, lots of light stuff. It was nice to have something just really rich and just, it was awesome. It just felt as if winter's coming. Now, I love winter anyway. It just felt really sort of comforting and warming. So, yeah, meatballs and a ragu sauce, and top tip with a ragu sauce, I'm always using black pepper with everything. You put a grinds of black pepper in and so on. But just get, the powdered white pepper, just stick a bit of that in it, and it just makes it so much richer and a really sort of gentle heat to it. It was beautiful. So, yeah. Meatballs and a nice tomato-y sauce. It was just comforting. It was lovely.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah, there we go. There's a show. So, remember, let me pull up this number. Let me pull up our number. You guys talk for a second. I'm going to pull up the number for our hotline.
Hey, Mareko, have you ever used smoked paprika?
I have, and I was completely blown away at how big of a difference it is from just regular paprika. It is a really nice way to, just finish things off a little bit, or just to get a little bit of that smoke flavor without... kind of blowing away or I guess messing up kind of the balance of flavors you got going on.
Do you know what Carl Ruiz calls smoked paprika? Carl Ruiz, Sabor Chef on Instagram, he calls it white trash. He calls it white trash saffron.
That's me.
I love it. I love it. I love it.
White trash saffron.
He calls it white trash saffron. I love it.
So here's the number. If you've got any tips, any news that you want us to share, if you're recruited, just like Tomer is, This is the place to tell. So it's, if you're outside the US, it's 00. Then it's +1 213, because we're on the West Coast, apparently. +1 213 261 0473. So +1 213 261 0473. And don't leave us, you know, messages going on, rambling on for minutes. Make it short, succinct, and yeah, tips, any questions you've got, any news. Just amuse us. Just amuse us. Send them through.
Yeah. No more Beavis and Butthead. It's over. Yeah. And then you can say...
No, no Beavis and
Butthead. And say LOL at the end.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for that. That's the show. We've got another one coming tomorrow, a little EDC. See you soon.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.